Welcome to Night Train Radio auf AM 1610 Hamtramck. Die heutige Show, wie schon gesagt, ist aus Live aus Hamtramck. Das Lied direkt in Detroit, in einem unabhängigen Sender. Und ich habe heute einen Studiogast, das wird sie, der Michael Hurt. Und wir werden heute ein bisschen hören. Das Programm wird sie alles in Englisch. So gut es geht. Und die Reise, die Zugreise wird uns führen von Detroit in die Swamps von Louisiana. Wir werden hören, was für Projekt, das der Michael Hurt im Moment schafft. Und ich werde jetzt umswitchen in Englisch. You're just tuned in into Night Train Radio. On the microphone is Lil Miss Pearl. Today at AM 1610 Hamtramck. And I'm proud to have a special guest tonight, which is Michael Hurt, music historian and musician and record collector. And he's going to talk about his journey into Detroit and down south. And he's going to talk about his music project and whatnot. And we're going to spin some records, of course. Michael Hurt's bands called the Royal Pendletons and the Haunted Hearts. And he's going to introduce himself right now. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hello.
Miss Pearl.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. So what did we hear before that was?
Adele Victor's.
With Acting Up, one of our favorite songs, right?
Right, indeed.
So what do you know about this group?
Well, they recorded for Fortune Records here in Detroit and always have been thought of as a Detroit group. But in my research with my friend Billy Miller, we're working on a book on Fortune Records, the legendary label here from Detroit. They recorded all kinds of different music, but they're known for mostly for their rhythm and blues and their hillbilly.
Right.
But the Del Victors, we found out, are actually from Ohio, Cleveland,
all
to
right.
be exact. And a lot of groups came from Toledo and the surrounding, you know, areas, not just in Michigan, but also the surrounding states to record at Fortune. And that was one of them.
Okay. So, and how did this particular sound evolve here? I mean, it almost everything sounds like it was recorded in a garage with very primitive equipment, right? But that's what we love about it. So
yeah, I mean, some of it, that's a hallmark of the Detroit sound, and that's one of the things that's always fascinated me about the music, a lot of the music from Detroit. There are, of course, everybody knows about Motown, but there are a whole lot of other labels and studios that were sort of in orbit, if you will, of Motown during the 60s, during their heyday as well as before that. And Fortune was one of the ones that was going strong before that, you know, since the late 40s, in fact. And they really brought the whole primitive recording element to a whole new level, possibly because the people that ran it were kind of eccentric and they really had a vision. They had two different studios. One of them was on Linwood here in Detroit, and the other was on 3rd Avenue. That's the one that people know probably a little more familiar with, because it was basically just a cinder block building with, some people say it had a dirt floor. It's probably not really true, but the really raw recordings, a lot of them came from there. And some of the, you know, better known artists are people like Nathaniel Mayer and Andre Williams, who also had a very guttural approach to their music. So it kind of went, they were at the right place.
Right. And they wanted it to sound just like that, I guess.
Some of them probably did. Some of them didn't.
Some of them not.
You know.
And the recording studio existed between 1946 and until 95. So what happened in the 80s, for instance?
Well, you know, the studio is still there. It wasn't really used.
All right.
Jack Brown got into a car accident in the early 70s, and it was partially paralyzed, and it seems like fortune sort of went down from there as far as the recording. They were still reissuing records and putting out older, unreleased, previously unreleased recordings, but basically they recorded until the early 70s.
And what kind of stuff did they release?
A lot of the groups that they, you know, one of the groups that they invested a lot in was Nolan Strong and the Diablos, and they really loved them and believed in them and tried their best to, you know, get their records out there and played, and they released a lot of stuff in the 80s that had not been, you know, previously released by the Diablos. But all along, they were such an eccentric label that they were reissuing things, even in the 60s, recordings that they'd recorded years before. They were really doing this early on. So that's one of the kind of mysteries. The title of the book that we're working on is Mind Over Matter, the Myths and Mysteries of Fortune Records.
That's a very good title, indeed.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And
it's kind of fitting, you know, because a lot of these things are mysteries and are going to remain mysteries no matter how much research we do. All we really have is in some cases, just the record, you know, and you just, whatever you can glean from listening to it, you know, is all you're going to know. But yeah, they did a lot of strange things. I mean, like for instance, Spider Turner recorded a record that Nathaniel Mayer wrote, Riding My 225.
All right. Yeah.
He recorded it in the early 60s, but it never came out. And I don't believe it came out until 1967, after he became famous. He had a hit on MGM. Then they put it out then.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were things like that going on the whole time.
And Norton helped a lot with reaching stuff, right?
Norton Records?
Yeah.
Well, they've been dedicated to researching this stuff for years. They've always loved it, Billy and Miriam both. And, you know, they've done a lot of work with different people that, you know, recorded for Fortune, like Nathaniel, as well as people like Johnny Powers, and also other people that were around during then, like Gina Washington and Danny Zella and people like that.
How do you guys work together? You're in Detroit here, and they're up in New York, so you do some interviews down here and
interviews. You know, I do interviews in person sometimes, also over the phone, whatever I can being here. Billy does stuff over the phone, sometimes in person as well, you know, with people that could, you know, because a lot of these people that we're talking to are all over the country now, you know.
All right. So a lot of them moved out.
Artists, and there are also record collectors, too, that we've been talking to, and people, DJs, people that have been into this stuff. You know, a lot of these doo-wop record collectors have been obsessed with Fortune since the records were new. So Billy's talked to a lot of those guys, like Louis Silvani, Don Folletti, and people like that, you know. And they always have a lot to say because they were around back then.
Of course.
And they were collecting the records, and they knew the Browns. They dealt with them.
And what was Fortune Records, the stuff they put out, was it just like a local success? But I heard Nathaniel Mayer, he had, was this like a success all over the country?
Village of Love. Yeah. It went to like number 22, I think. I'm not, if my numbers are correct, on the national pop charts, and went even higher in some cities like Chicago.
Right.
And I'm trying to remember where else, possibly Pittsburgh, I'm not sure, but and maybe New York too. So, you know, it depends. The problem with Fortune was they were very mistrusting of distributors, and so they didn't really want to license their records to let them go, and therefore they couldn't really get the distribution, and they couldn't get the radio play outside of this area that a lot of other record companies that were willing to do that could.
Okay.
So a lot of them stayed local, you know, a lot of these records. Nolan Strong and the Diablos, their records got out there. I mean, because, you know, they had such a unique sound and people really loved them. You know, they bought them.
Right.
Andre Williams got out there as well, you know, partially because Bacon Fat came out on Epic. They licensed that.
And we know that Andre Williams is still alive. Melvin Davis is still alive. Who else?
Both
is
still
out
performing.
There? Right.
Well, just in Detroit, George Young, who recorded a couple great rockers for Fortune, Buggin' Baby being one of them.
Right.
He's still around, still performs. Tony Valla, who had a group called the Alamos that backed up Dr. Ross on Cat Squirrel and some other records.
Yeah.
He's still around here in Detroit. Yeah, there's quite a few people that are still around. Wendy Smith, who's a great bluegrass musician, mandolin player, and singer. He's still around. He recorded for Fortune.
Okay. So we're going to hear in this program, we're going to hear all kinds of genres. As I said earlier, our journey will take us from the north to the south and back to the north, probably, if we were ever going to make it.
Yeah, right? If we have enough time, yep.
So, since when do you live in Detroit here? Why did you choose to come here? I mean, it's kind of obvious. It's the music, right?
Yeah.
Was it really that project you were working on, like you want to work on?
The Fortune book, definitely. It was an impetus, but I was living in New Orleans. I grew up in Indiana, South Bend, Indiana, so it's not too far from Detroit, about 4 hours away. And growing up, I was always obsessed with not just the music here, but the architecture, and it always seemed like kind of a mecca of the arts.
Yeah.
Really, really kind of magical place. And so I always thought of it in those terms. And then I moved to New Orleans in my early 20s and formed my band, the Royal Pendletons, and we used to come up here and play a lot. And it just seemed like people really understood and appreciated rock and roll here. And I met a lot of, you know, friends that were into these records and turned me on to a lot of this stuff. And I had thought about doing a Fortune book. Billy had thought about doing one as well. And I'd always had it in the back of my mind, well, if I really want to do that book, maybe I need to spend some time in Detroit, you know, on a permanent basis. And then the hurricane in 2005 in New Orleans flooded my house, and it was quite a mess, and I wasn't sure what to do, just like a lot of New Orleanians, you know, and people that live there. We're kind of all scattered all over the country, and you kind of just end up where you land. And I ended up here, and I just thought, well, why not? You know, I'm up here already. Why not give it a, you know?
Well, I bet that was a great decision.
Well, I hope so. Sometimes I wonder, but
well,
mixed, you know,
mixed
it's always
feelings
gonna be mixed.
About it.
Yeah,
yeah, of course. Of course,
absolutely.
It's never the way we expect it to be, right?
Right, exactly.
We're going to hear some music right now. It's going to be Nolan Strong and the Diablos. And it's Do You Remember What You Did?
Thank you. no lie. Every time I was a minute late, I had to apologize.
All right, we're back. Night Train Radio here. Michael, what did we just hear?
Well, we just heard the Seminoles, straight out of Detroit, Michigan, with It Takes a Lot. And before that, we had Doo-Wop-A-Doo, which is an early record by Johnny Mae Matthews, actually her first record. Trying to remember what the name of the band was. Do you have it over there? Can you dig it out? It's buried in the vinyl stacks.
Which one?
The one on Brax.
God. Not able to find it.
Johnny Mae Matthews and the Five Daps. Okay, I
thought I gave it to you, but...
Awesome. Oh, it's lost in the vinyl stacks, the vinyl pits. They're getting bigger and bigger.
Too many records here. Such
a mess. Five Daps.
All right.
And before that, we heard Now You Have to Cry Alone by Edward Hamilton and the Arabians, another great group from Detroit from the early 60s. And we started it out with...
Wasn't there another group called the Arabians?
Yeah, there was. Little Herbert and the Arabians. Right. I'm not sure where they're from, but it's not the same as Edward Hamilton and the Arabians.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Although they do get people mix them up sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like me, for
In fact,
instance.
They got bootlegged on the same CD.
Okay.
There was really? A bootleg CD of the Arabians with both Edward Hamilton's group and Little Herbert's group, two from two different cities that didn't even know each other. But there were a lot of, similar names back then,
mm-hmm,
and,
obviously.
Especially the exotic names like the Arabians. And then before Edward Hamilton, we had I Won't Cry No More by Timmy Shaw, another great Detroit singer. That's his first record. It was put out on Bond Records, which was a label that was owned by Johnny Mae Matthews. She owned a lot of labels and produced a lot of records here in the 60s here in Detroit. Another sort of unsung hero that engineered that really raw sound that we associate mm-hmm. with Fortune. But it isn't just Fortune. There's so many labels that had that, It was almost like a spirit here in Detroit. Other cities had it too, but here it just seemed to be rawer and go deeper or something,
Mm-hmm.
And then we started out with Nolan Strong and the Diablos. Do you remember what you did?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been working with Melvin Davis lately, and also earlier when you wrote the liner notes on his, I guess it was a 45 that came out, and also
45 on Norton,
and
yeah.
NLP on Vampy Soul, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did that happen? How did that?
Well,